Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. Today we're starting a brand new series on Ronald D. Moore as a showrunner, and today we're going to be looking at his work on Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Ron Moore, but more than Moore.
Okay, and today we are joined by Matt Rushing. How's it going, Matt?
It's going great. How are you guys?
We're doing okay. Now, last time we had you on the show was because you were the co-host, or you are the co-host of Literary Treks on FF. On Trek FM, and this time we have you on the show because you're the co-host of The Orb on Trek FM. We figured that was appropriate since, Ron Moore is such a huge part of Deep Space Nine. So thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Before we get to Deep Space Nine, let me just say that first off, when we first came up with the idea for this show, like the thing that I was looking forward to more than anything else, the one that I really, 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 really wanted to do was Ron Moore. And we're finally doing it.
Because you really want to talk about Roswell.
I want to talk about how badass
Roswell is.
I want to talk about how much I love Roswell. I want to talk about how much I love Battlestar Galactica and how much I love Ron Moore.
Get your hankies ready, because it's going to be romantic when we get to Roswell.
Because
it's going to be sad and tragic.
Okay, honestly, I think that Ron Moore is the best creator that Star Trek has ever had. So, I'll just preface this series
just
by saying
stay over
that.
There in the corner.
Okay, Matt. In general, what are your feelings on Ron Moore?
Well, the thing I really like about Ron Moore is that whenever you watch one of his shows, they're very character-driven. He's trying to tell you something about these characters. He's a mythology maker. I mean, he enjoys, I think, that myth-making aspect. And so as I watch his shows that he's worked on, you can really see that come to light, and for me it's something that I really enjoy. I really respond to good character writing, but I also really respond to creating kind of a continuous mythology throughout your show, and he does that really well. And in fact, the two episodes that he's involved in Voyager, you can actually see him trying to do that, and then he just gets slapped down and quits. But, through The Next Generation and then Deep Space Nine, you really see him continuously working to grow characters, to create a mythology for, especially certain races like the Klingons, and all of those things put together, I think, like you said, make him a really effective showrunner, because he seems to really care about the material that he's working on and trying to make it the best that it can be. And, what more could you really want from a showrunner?
Okay, well, Max, what do you think about Ron Moore?
Going through, after Deep Space Nine, when that show ended, there was a period of darkness, and it was difficult to find Star Trek that I particularly had an attachment to. But then, eventually BSG showed up, and I was like, oh, this is fantastic. And a lot of the things that I would say to people are good about Star Trek were present in it. And I was like, it's got like that thing where it's like really good characters and really good stories and really good dramatic concept. And it's also really asking difficult questions about society and politics and essentially like the morality of everyday consequences. And so like I was really a big fan of like Ron Moore's general approach to things. Because, you take the Deep Space Nine, you take the BSG, and you throw in some spices from Roswell, I suppose, and you're like, yeah, he's pretty well-rounded. He's also kind of crazy, because he comes up with like really bizarre ideas for TV shows, and while he is like very character-driven in his writing, he also does sort of love really big, crazy, high-concept stuff. I mean, he's a weird, difficult-to-pin-down guy, because he doesn't have that one really great, amazing thing that he's super perfect at, because his mythologies have problems. And his character stuff is incredibly good, but also kind of relies on that mythology stuff, and I can't pin it down.
All right, well, maybe over the course of the next couple months we'll be able to.
No, it's going to unravel. It's going to get even worse.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, as I said, I think he's the best creator ever to come out of Star Trek.
To come out of Star Trek.
Yeah, to ever work in Star Trek, to ever come out of Star Trek, sure.
To come out of Star Trek, because Gene Roddenberry never really got out.
To ever work in Star Trek, I would say. But, you know, I mean, pretty much the same reaction that you had when, you know, Battlestar Galactica came on. I watched it specifically because I knew that Ron Moore had created it or developed it or whatever, and it just blew me away, and I, ever since then, have just sort of eaten up anything that Ron Moore was willing to give me. So today we're going to be talking about his work on Star Trek, and we'll start with The Next Generation, where he wrote 27 episodes, or at least helped write 27 episodes. His very first was The Bonding in season 3, and that was a spec script that he wrote for the show. And Gene Roddenberry apparently hated this script, but thankfully Michael Piller was there and he bought it and they altered it into something which was usable. Well, Matt, what did you think about The Bonding?
Well, I thought it was really interesting because you can tell right away that Ron has an affinity for Klingons, because he's writing an episode about Worf and his struggle of being a command and losing somebody under his command, and the importance of family to Klingons that's really going to come out in this series, and all of these things he's already kind of set in motion in this one episode. But I like this episode. I think it's a really strong, a really well-acted character episode, and I think Ron Moore's writing shines in it and really makes the best out of what we're given. And you can tell right away that he's going to be a strong writer for the show.
Yeah. Max, what about you? Did you like The Bonding?
Well, when this episode aired, I did not care for it, but it's mainly because the storyline that got shoved into it after the, you know, the script was bought, and then it was the alterations to make it compatible with Roddenberry's idea. But I did appreciate any time on Next Gen, like in those early days, any time on Next Gen when they would, like, sort of open up the world to sort of see, like, closer down to the ground, like, what, like, day-to-day life was like, I would relish those moments. So seeing, like, Troy being a counselor really made me happy.
I think more than anything, I'm interested in, like, sort of the evolution of that script and sort of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Then I, you know, the episode itself, I'm not really that interested in at all. But, you know, looking at the rest of his Next Generation career, you know, just, I mean, some of these episodes are just like monsters, you know, like Yesterday's Enterprise. Well, I guess everyone did.
Well, he didn't do anything on Yesterday's Enterprise.
he wrote like one act, right? Data's Day.
But Data's Day wasn't his thing. It was somebody else's idea.
These are a lot of them are, you know, other people's things.
Like, I think if you want to point to like an episode and say like this is where Ron Moore proves that he's like the man or the Mizan.
Family was the first time I think that they realized we have to follow up what happened last week with something. We can't just pretend like this didn't happen. Ron Moore shows in that episode that he understands character development, like and consequences for things pretty well. I do like the choices he makes in this episode here. I think it comes off really, really well. And if they hadn't done anything, I mean, good grief. That would have just been ridiculous.
Family's a weird episode because in the context of the series, it's so bound up in what's great about Next Generation that it's impossible to talk about the show being good without mentioning that episode. But out of context, it's the one really weird episode where nobody really does anything and Picard cries.
But like,
and that's so weird for Next Generation because it didn't really have continuity, and the idea there's this one little bizarre outlier.
Well, but I think, you know, if you jump, say, to the end of the series with All Good Things, you can tell that, again, Ron knows what he's doing with the mythology that the show had created. The little tiny bit of mythology that the show has created, they used to end the show.
Yeah,
and my goodness,
on for years about how fantastic All Good Things is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, Ron Moore and Brandon Braga's work on All Good Things makes everything okay. I forgive Aquiel. It's okay, Aquiel.
Something that you brought up about the bonding, which I had never really thought of, but looking at the list, I can totally see, you know, you were like, this is a sort of like ground level portrayal of, you know, day-to-day life on the Enterprise. And yeah, like looking at his other episodes, he did Family, Data's Day, In Theory, Disaster, even I would put in that category.
Disaster, oh, I hate Disaster.
I love Disaster.
Oh, it's so frustrating, Disaster.
And
it's
he
like,
has...
I get it, Troy sucks.
And he quickly sort of rose to prominence, in a sense, as sort of like, not the showrunner or anything like that, but sort of as like the go-to guy for writing. I mean,
he became their Klingonsman.
Well, that's tied into this. I mean, he wrote Family, which is following up Best of Both Worlds. And then by the time, you know, that season ends, he wrote, I think, solely Redemption Parts 1 and 2. Which
yes.
is then, you know, also big Klingon stuff, you know, not to mention the fact that later on they, you know, he wrote Tapestry, and then they gave him...
It's also kind of the big, you know, season set pieces. That's a pretty big deal.
Right, and then they gave him All Good Things.
His track record is pretty amazing on the show. I mean, there's a couple of missteps. Obviously, Aquiel is one that even they can't stand either. But on a whole, I mean, his work is pretty impeccable on this show.
Yeah, and now, I mean, Max and I have both talked about All Good Things at great length, you know, in our Brandon Braga thing and everything. Needless to say, we both enjoy it quite a bit. What about you, Matt? Are you a fan of All Good Things?
I am, because of the way that they are able to wrap the whole show up. They end where they began and leaves you feeling like, if I never saw this crew again, I'm okay.
Yeah, and it is one of the best finales in television history, probably. So after All Good Things, at least in terms of release schedule, he then worked on both Generations and First Contact with Brandon Braga. Max and I have talked about both of those movies at great length as well. Generations is a movie which I love for many reasons, not all of them being logical ones. And Max, I think it's safe to say, is not a fan of that or First Contact.
All of my reasons being logical ones.
Which could may or may not be a fault. And First Contact is, you know...
May or may not be a fault?
Yeah, well, we got into that with the Brandon Braga thing, but whatever. First Contact is another one which I love and Max does not love. What about you, Matt? Where do you fall on the Braga-more movies?
Generations is probably the second best Next Generation film, just because... They're really saddled with this whole idea of having to, you know, put Kirk in the movie, and the movie suffers for it. It's not a terrible movie. It's just not a great movie, especially when The Undiscovered Country was my favorite Star Trek movie, and it's fantastic. And then you get to this point, and, you know, it's okay. Kirk dies for some kind of lame reason. It's about as subtle as a brick.
Or a bridge.
Yeah, there you go.
Falling on your body, crushing your bones.
But one of the things that is I can say positive about the movie is that you can again see Ron Moore really trying to take these Next Generation characters and really grow them. And so it's an okay movie for me. I mean, it's the second best Next Generation film. For me, I love First Contact. I think it's fantastic. I think it's the best Next Generation film. Max, I mean, we could probably argue till the end of Kingdom Come that it's not illogical, but I like it. I think it's fantastic. So,
all right. Well, after Generations, I guess technically First Contact was done during Deep Space Nine, but he moved on to the writing staff of Deep Space Nine after Next Generation had ended. And the very first episode that he did was the very first episode that he was involved with on the Deep Space Nine staff, and that was the third season premiere, The Search, Part 1. That, to me, alone says a lot about, you know, his talent. The fact that they were like, this is the rookie kid, at least on Deep Space Nine. And I mean, that...
Well, hold on. Rookie kid. I mean, like, he was already, like...
He was
kind of co-running the show on Next Gen.
He was the new guy. He was the new guy on the new kid on the block, let's put it that way.
He was the new big kid on the block.
Okay.
Who had his own car and had beers because his dad was really cool.
Okay. Perhaps. But regardless, they gave him, you know, writing duties on the search part one, at least for the teleplay. And that was, you know, a pretty huge episode. I mean, that to me is really sort of the turning point of the show. Not turning point, but where they kick it into high gear, you know? Well, what do you guys think about the search part one? You a fan, Matt?
Yeah, I think it's a great addition to Deep Space Nine. I think it takes everything that they had done in those first couple of seasons and just ramps up what this show is going to be, and it really shows just how much we're going to be a slave to continuity on this show by allowing these guys to just start running with the material. It becomes Star Trek's best series.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Max, do you have anything to add to that? Or, I mean, I think that pretty much sums it up.
No, I couldn't tell you exactly what's fantastic about The Search, but I do remember, like, around this point in time, Deep Space Nine gradually became, like, a show that I didn't know when it was on to a show that infuriated me because I didn't know when it was on. We're in Chicago. It was impossible to know when it was on because of stupid baseball games, because baseball is made by the devil.
The Cubs, and not the Sox.
Let doesn't matter.
Specify.
All baseball
it's
is equal.
Very important
all of it is all of
the
all of it is abominations in the eyes of the non-sports loving God.
Okay.
And like, I found it infuriating because I couldn't watch this show that I was suddenly becoming very into.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the thing about, like, The Search Part 1. I probably couldn't tell you the plot of it I probably could if I really needed to. But, you know, the things that we're seeing here are, like, Founders, Dominion, Defiant. And, you know, I don't think there's a coincidence that this is, you know, right around the time that Ira Steven Barrett took over the show. And the fact that all of these Next Generation guys came on, what you're seeing here with the start of Season 3 is the formation of the core writing staff. And those guys, I almost see them as like a unit, and it's kind of hard to just pick out episodes and say, like, oh, that episode was written by that guy, isn't it great? Because to me, it's like it was really a writing team. And this writing team was writing not an episode here or there, but like a show. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the first time that ever really happened on Star Trek. At least that's the impression that I got. And because of that, like, when I was sort of, like, prepping this, I was like, well, what do we talk about as far as, like, his Deep Space Nine episodes? And it's like, you can't really pull out individual episodes and say, like, didn't he do a great job on that? Because I just feel like he needs to be credited, along with the rest of the staff, for the entire show.
I completely agree, and that is my point about like why it was really hard to know what exactly was going on. Because I couldn't tell you what Ron Moore did on Deep Space Nine until I watched all of BSG.
Yeah,
right. Because like once you watch all of it, you can sort of like do that weird like clue logic where like you know what cards you have and you know what cards the other players have, and you're like, oh, I got it. It was Colonel Sanders in the kitchen with the chain gun. I'm making up different things.
Okay.
Deep Space Nine was sort of defined by like a band. I mean, like, you can say, like, oh, you know, Ringo wrote Octopus's Garden.
By Ringo,
so we can blame that.
Steven Bear because of the glasses?
No.
Okay, anyway, go ahead.
I'm saying that I don't know who the Ringo of Deep Space Nine is. But it wasn't Ron Moore, because Ron Moore has got to be the Paul McCartney.
Yeah, yeah. Ira Steven Bear is the John.
Yeah.
Ron
yeah.
Moore is the Paul McCartney. I would say that...
Rene Echevarria?
Is he
Pete Best?
He's George.
Oh, he's George.
I would say Hans Beimler is Ringo. No. Joe Manosky's Ringo.
Joe Manosky's Ringo? Take that, Joe Manosky. Also, Ringo Starr. Both of these guys are still alive.
I mean it as a compliment.
But, oh, okay.
I think that you're really hitting on the head is that, you know, all of these guys from the Next Generation finally get to come over to Deep Space Nine. They know this universe really, really well, and they're finally unshackled, you know,
yeah.
Unchained.
Yeah,
in
they
some
don't
ways.
They don't and, have and, like and, that studio oversight like a produced boy band might have.
You know, sometimes limitations are good, sometimes they're not, and this show I think just had the right amount to really foster something awesome.
I agree completely. I also think there are intangible qualities to that group of guys. I think yeah. that like regardless of like how much oversight they had, if those guys didn't work together the way they worked together, that show wouldn't work. No yeah. matter how talented they are, like they can't overcome like a basic principle of human interaction that room full of those guys had to be functional.
That could be.
I mean, like, there's no way to know, like, why it worked, but, like, sometimes it works not for any good reason, but just because the right pieces are there.
I mean, I agree with all that, too. And, you know, I mean, for anyone who is more interested in the creation of Deep Space Nine, I highly recommend reading the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion, which goes
yes.
a lot into the writing staff.
Set aside a big chunk of time.
Read it while you're watching the show.
Yeah,
you
know? It is the most fantastic companion ever written for Star Trek.
It is. The other thing that you know we see here with Deep Space Nine is sort of Ron Moore solidifying his position as the Klingon guy, and I think
the Klingonsman.
Yeah, and I think that this
I want that to catch on.
The fact that he was there, I think, is a big part of why bringing Worf onto the show worked. You know, because that was the other thing. You know, in addition to the Defiant, I wasn't opposed to the Defiant thing, but Worf.
And Worf came onto Deep Space Nine.
Yep, that was the thing where I was like, they're bringing on Worf. Wow, what a sellout move! You know, I am not behind this. And then I think under the leadership of Ron Moore, the Klingon storyline, you know, I mean, I know Ira Stephen Bear was the leader, but as far as, you know, like making the Klingons specifically work, I think that had a whole heck of a lot to do with Ron Moore.
Well, and it too, I mean, one of the best parts was is that it allowed Worf to interact with, you know, kind of the quintessential amazing Klingon that we'd never really seen, which was Martok.
Yes.
And that creation, I think, did more for solidifying what we really wanted Klingons to be like. And I mean, Martok is the guy who's completely honorable and a man of, you know, really kind of above reproach in a lot of ways. What it really meant to be a true Klingon. You know, a lot of the Klingons we'd seen in some ways had a lot more of a Romulan Ferengi vibe to them.
Well, in a way, they explored him so expertly by actually having him fail at being a perfect Klingon on numerous occasions, which
mm-hmm.
made him work
yes.
better than almost yeah. anyone else. I certainly didn't believe that the Klingons could be a possible civilization until Martok made
exactly.
it believable.
It was really the first time where you saw like a Klingon, like a full-on Klingon doing his full-on Klingon thing, but not in like a stereotypical Klingon way, not in like the we're only going to see this character's life for the span of a week, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
like you saw the ups and downs of what it was to be a Klingon, and you know that was in a way that you couldn't with Worf, because Worf is constantly dealing with the fact that he's the only Klingon, you know.
Yeah, but it's not just the stereotypical quality. It's the, like, by actually exploring it from like a character point of view. I mean, really, Worf was a Klingon that we saw from a character point of view, but we didn't see him being a Klingon in Klingon society, and the society looked insane. It looked
right.
like a society of frat guys, and it seemed like, who's doing the dishes on this planet? Like how are people making spaceships here? So like obviously it would spin apart. But like seeing like Martok, you know, go through decisions and like have like an internal conflict and like being a Klingon on a day to day basis, it finally seemed plausible.
Yeah,
right.
So after Deep Space Nine ended,
the dark times.
Before the Empire,
Ron Moore very quickly and very, you know, some would say logically. on paper.
Who are these some?
On paper, you're right. Yeah. It's definitely the next move. Is to
yeah.
just go to the next series.
It's the wings of Star Trek series.
He joined
you get
Voyager.
It? Because of Paul McCartney?
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Ooh. Ron Moore moved on to Voyager, where he was going to be, theoretically speaking, Brannon Braga's right-hand man, which I think was problem number one. The only thing that I mean by that is...
Subtext-free statement coming now.
Brandon Braga and Ron Moore were writing partners. So now for one of those guys, and it could have been, the situation could have been reversed and the same exact thing would have happened, for one of those guys to now be the boss of the other guy, that's going to cause some conflict. At least that's how it seems. I don't know the situation. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. The point is that Ron Moore was not happy working on Voyager, and so after two episodes, he left. While he was there, he only wrote one episode and didn't even stick around for it to be shot. And that episode was Survival Instinct, which was the one where, if I'm not mistaken, they find some other Borg people from Seven of Nine's ship or something. Can someone?
Yeah, Unimatrix 01. And
Unimatrix 02.
What's amazing about the episode is that in one episode, Ron Moore gives us a ton of backstory for who Seven is and just the experiences she has as Borg. It's an incredible episode, I think, and really shows where he could have taken this show by injecting some freaking continuity into it. And, you know, he comes onto a show where the writers don't care about continuity.
I think the indication is that everybody, I think even Brandon Braga has admitted that, like, they didn't have a good band on that show.
That was the thing. That's what I was just going to say is,
like,
you know,
they might have all been individually really good, but they weren't a good band.
The difference, right. Yeah, the difference between Deep Space Nine and Voyager, according to Moore, and the reason why I didn't like it is, you know, Deep Space Nine, like we were saying, they were a team. They worked together to create a complete show. Whereas with Voyager, everyone was sort of off doing their own thing and doing their own episodes and, in essence, competing with each other instead of working with each other. And the end result was something which was rather disjointed.
Like a reunion tour.
So, Matt, any final thoughts on Ron Moore's work on Star Trek?
I think that Ron Moore is a good writer. I think that, like all writers, you need the right team of people around you to help tell you when you've gone too far. I think we see that on Battlestar Galactica. I don't think that he had enough people to keep him from over-mythologizing or, you know, going super crazy with characters. But I think his work on The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine really gave us some of the best things from Star Trek. I'm always looking forward to what he'll do next outside of Star Trek, because I think he is a good creator. I think he has some great ideas. If you get the right people around him, he makes awesome things in the same way that I think George Lucas does as well. You get the right people around him, he makes awesome things. I really appreciate all that Ron added to Star Trek. I appreciate that he really fleshed out the Klingons. I appreciate that he came into Deep Space Nine, took his gifts of mythologizing, and really helped create a beautiful tapestry for that series. I'm always thankful that he got accepted with that spec script and became a part of the Trek family.
Max?
Well, I pretty much agree with all of that. I think that the... Yeah, I can't criticize BSG the way that I once did, because I just think that it's part of a movement towards, you know, just generally better written stuff that doesn't really have an overarching point. I think that BSG was amazing for all the same reasons Game of Thrones is amazing, but I'm not expecting the finale of Game of Thrones to wrap things up nicely. I do have a great appreciation for everything Ron Moore has done over the years. Except for Roswell, but I haven't, you know, dealt with my issues with 90s teen shows yet. Still got some hang-ups about those. But yeah, he's an amazingly good writer who has created an amazingly great show that has some problems. But I mean, I can't even criticize those problems because they're so small compared to how much better BSG is than any other show that was on and maybe still is on.
All right, well, I am also obviously a huge fan of Ron Moore and his work on Star Trek All Good Things, Generations, First Contact are all some of my absolute favorite Star Trek things. And on Deep Space Nine, the series on the whole is one of my absolute favorite Star Trek things. And even within that, he did, like, Trials and Tribulations, which, you know, you gotta love stuff like that. So, I would have loved to have seen what he would do with Voyager. I'd love to see what that show would be like with Ron Moore on staff. But I know that he said that a lot of the ideas which he had for Voyager, he then sort of implemented on BSG. And I think that being able to take those ideas and apply them to a show where he had control over it is probably for the best, and in the end I'll sacrifice his Voyager years to get some BSG. So yeah, very, very big fan of Ron Moore, and I can't wait to look at the rest of the shows. So Matt, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me at MattRushing02 on Twitter. I'm also doing The Orb, all about Deep Space Nine, with Christopher Jones, as well as Literary Treks, about the books and comics universe on Trek FM.
To the reader.
That's right, with Chris Jones as well. And I also have my own personal website. It's 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Just review movies, books, talk about just kind of anything that comes into my brain, so you can look at that as well.
You know, I always like having Matt on the show because, you know, he's a really nice guy and all that. But
he has a very soothing voice.
He does. And he's also a very good podcaster, you know. Mm-hmm. You listen to The Orb and Literary Treks?
Yes.
Me too. But those aren't the only shows that we have on Trek FM. We've got a whole variety of things. There's a show every day of the week. And in case you missed any, here's a little spot with some stuff from the past week.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Sacrifice of Angels.
Again, Dukat in his overconfidence. Should we have anybody go after him? No.
Yeah,
fine.
Just let him go.
Yeah,
it's
just,
all right.
I mean, we'll destroy him when he gets here.
The Ready Room.
Khan.
But because they had to do this convolution, and they don't, I mean, Kirk should have had a reaction to that being Khan. And when he says the name Khan, that should mean, he didn't say my name is Noonien, you know, he said Khan. And you would at least have a thing in your mind going, oh, genetically enhanced Khan, this has got to be the Khan.
To the journey!
The fight.
I'll never forgive you, listeners, for putting me through watching that again. Although this episode did give us the line, was your opponent firing some type of energy weapon at you? And then Chakotay goes, just his gloves. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Richard Matheson recap.
And my favorite chapter in the Matheson life is when he was hired by Rod Serling to work on The Twilight Zone, the first season of The Twilight Zone, because that is a fantastic moment in history where Rod Serling was creating something that would eventually become an incredibly important artifact of history.
Warp 5.
The Mako.
Well, the employment arrangements are actually relatively interesting to contemplate. As, you know, you've joked about whether they were contractors or not, but as you've stated, they are outside of Starfleet.
Trek News and Views.
7 of 9 Day.
She was a bit overused, and it was a bit ridiculous some of the things her magical nanoprobes could do, but...
Literary Treks.
Mission's End.
The question is, do you feel like Section 31 is overused? Everyone wants to use Section 31, and so they just keep popping up in every story, and I think sometimes it does a disservice to the idea of Section 31.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So yeah, be sure to check out those shows to get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have shows for you every day, and you'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download the files from the website. Just go to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links.
If you listen to all of the podcasts on Trek FM, you may or may not win a prize.
There you go.
You will not.
And as always, you can find our other show on commentarytrackstars.com, where if not already, then very soon you can find Matt talking to us about Man of Steel. And then you can also find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars or email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. Hit us up on the forums at Trek FM. We're all on there, and leave us some feedback or whatnot. Thanks again for joining us, Matt, and we will be back next week with your co-host, Chris, to talk about Roswell.